Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On TalkSport.
You're listening to the Fight Night podcast from TalkSport. Hope you are well. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure to be in your company. As I tell everybody every single week, if it's the first time that you've come across us, please hit subscribe. I don't want you missing out on any of the boxing content that we're bringing you on a week-by-week basis. It is top draw, as you're going to hear, obviously, throughout the course of this podcast with the guest that we spoke to on Saturday night show. So go to iTunes, look for Fight Night, TalkSport podcast. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Or if you need an Android feed, you can go to the TalkSport website. It's all there for you. Right, let's get on with the show, shall we? We spoke to tons of people on Saturday night's programme, and we started with Dillian White. He's, of course, preparing for his rematch with Alexander Povetkin, taking place in Gibraltar on March the 27th. Now, Dillian was in Portugal, training there, but with all the COVID restrictions and travel restrictions, he's had to move camp to Spain. So we thought we'd start the interview with a little bit of humour. That's right, we decided to start the interview talking to Dillian in Spanish, just to see whether he picked up the local lingo.
I'm a warrior. A lot of guys in boxing are cowards. That's why a lot of fights don't get made. A lot of guys are scared to lose. A lot of guys are scared to be knocked out. I don't sit and think, oh my God, I lost or I get stopped. I'm going to listen to the doubters or the haters. No, that ain't me. I'm a warrior.
I'll say this, and I 100% believe that Dillian White will one day lift the heavyweight championship of the world. With the right opponents at the right time, he can do it.
You're listening to Fight Night on TalkSport. I'm Adam Catterall, Gareth A. Davies alongside me. And of course, we are welcoming the main man, Dillian White, to the show. Before we welcome Dillian to the show, Gareth, I'm sure you are fully aware that this man has visited more countries than Judith Chalmers recently. He's obviously up sticks from Portugal. He's now doing it in Spain. And I'm led to believe, actually, from our producer, Ed, he said that Dillian wants to come. He wants to do the whole interview in Spanish. And obviously, you being a Spanish speaker, Gareth, and obviously me, part Spanish, we should be fine. So hopefully Dillian's up to speed with everything as a resident of Spain right now. Dillian White, hola, buenas noches.
Buenas noches, Dillian, ¿cómo estás?
Sí, ese. Bueno.
sí, todo es bueno. No, quiero hacerlo en español, tío, por favor. Sí. Hablamos en español, por favor.
No falo español, por favor.
You're a good sport. Dillian, listen, man, welcome back to the show. It's been great. You thought we were going to do the whole thing then in Spanish, didn't you?
Man.
Your face.
I wish I could speak another language, man. I wish.
Mate, you're out there. Get in, get amongst it. You should be learning the lingo, you know?
It's in Spanish and Portuguese, and those languages different. Are hard to speak. They're very hard to speak, man.
Very hard, different language, mate. Anyway, estás esperando la pelea por Vekin, yeah?
Sí.
No, we'll stop. Leave it.
I was going to say bad word.
Listen, you're a good sport, mate. Listen, in all seriousness, how much of a disruption has it been having to up sticks from Portugal? Because I know you were settled there and working and grafting away there. Obviously, with the COVID and all that type of thing, we know that the fight's going to Gibraltar. So how much of a bit of a disruption has it been going from Portugal over to Spain?
We didn't end up getting Spain in the end, anyway. We stayed in Portugal, anyway, because the fight's not going to be in Gibraltar. So obviously, we stayed in Spain. You know, obviously, that was the plan, was to go to Spain and then go to England, because obviously it was easy to fly to England from Spain. But we ended up staying. Really upset in Portugal because the fight's going to be in Gibraltar, so you know, we don't need to go to Spain.
And the date changes as well, because obviously this was originally
scheduled
for November, wasn't it? And then we've had a couple of pushbacks.
This fight was scheduled for May 2nd or May 3rd or May 6th, I think, 2020. And we're in 2000. We're in 2021, you know what I mean? There's been a lot of delays, you know what I mean? And obviously, I'm just fortunate and glad enough that my team put in place the rematch clause. And I'm fortunate enough to be having the rematch clause, whether it's next week, 2 weeks or now, 3 weeks or now. I'm the fortunate that, you know, I got a shot to get back right where I am instead of having to go and fight other guys and build back up. Then he fights someone else and potentially lose or retire, you know what I mean? Obviously, we have him on the hook, so I'm just glad. So for me, been frustrating, but at the same time I've also been like, you know what, just chill, you got your chance to have the rematch, man.
To use a Spanish word, Dillian, you have shown real cojones.
Nice.
Getting back in
big
there.
Cojones.
Really cojones. Big old cojones, brother. Nothing like a good pair of really good cojones. Yeah, so but you have shown amazing cojones to get back in there. But you mentioned frustration there. How do you manage when you've got camp after camp after camp? Do you actually take a break in camp because you don't want to overtrain? Because it must be a serious issue for the team and for you. Because I know what you're like. You don't stop working. Have you actually had to take time off as well?
Yeah, I've had to take time off. But it's been good because, like I say, people forget I'm one of the top fighters in the world, but I'm still relatively inexperienced. I'm still learning, so there's always something to work and there's always something to strip back and more time to work and this, more time to work and legs and movement or this. There's always something. So for me, it's like, okay, we strip back and then we go back to something else. So we go back to doing more stuff for balance and more stuff like that. So for me, it's been quite easy. Just the main thing is being away from my family and stuff, man. Obviously, young kids and, young kids, you know, girlfriend, mom, brothers, sisters, you know, the big family of us. So been quite stressful, but it is what it is, you know what I mean? I got to work, man, you know.
That's it, man. The sacrifices that fighters make is absolutely crazy. The things that you guys go through, it's crackers. In reality, I mean, people might disagree with what I'm about to say here. I know that there's other fights that are being made that are moving this heavyweight division along a little bit. Mm-hmm. We're obviously going to be seeing Usyk and Joe Joyce. Mm-hmm. We're hearing that Hunter and Hergovic are going to be fighting as well, and that might be for something like on the IBF side of stuff. But in reality, you're giggling away there. But in reality, Dil, right, the defeat to Povetkin, I'm sure in the moment, felt like that it had knocked you back down the ladder. But in reality, a victory actually puts you back in a position maybe to go and fight someone like a Deontay Wilder, and then you're back exactly where you were, right at the front of the queue again.
I can fight Deontay Wilder now, regardless. I don't need to be perfect in the fight Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder doesn't hold. The only thing Deontay Wilder hold was the heavyweight championship. Really, it wasn't a big draw, wasn't a big ticket seller. He wasn't even selling out arenas in America, and he was American, so it wasn't a big draw. He just had the belt, and he's lost the belt now, so he ain't really got nothing now. You know, obviously, a win against Povetkin puts me above where I was. You know, it puts me back as a real serious contender, and it should put me as number three in the world. Again, you know.
You want the Deontay Wilder fight, though, don't you? Because I know you've spoke about it for some time.
Yeah, I definitely want the Deontay Wilder fight. But right now I'm just focusing on Povetkin, obviously. Because Povetkin's a serious guy, very experienced operator, serious guy. Focusing on Povetkin. and then let's see what happens. You know what I mean? But obviously, once I beat Povetkin, then Deontay Wilder can suck cojones, man. You know, I need to focus on that. I want to fight for the world title. He had the world title. You know what I mean? I want to fight for... Everyone that's been around the same time as me has had all the rubbish guys that had 2-3. Dominic Brazil, 2-3 world title fight. Eric Molina, 2-3 world title fight. Johan Dupa, 2 world title fight. All of these guys, you know, like now, Erkovich Hunter, if one of them win, they probably get a world title fight before me. It's crazy.
That's a good point.
No, it is extraordinary when one looks down who you've fought. And how you've gone in the last, you know, the two fights with Derek Chisora, the Joseph Parker fight, Lucas Brown, Oscar Rivas, Marius Wack, Povetkin. I mean, I know you didn't win that fight, but it's extraordinary that you have not had a world title fight in that time. Now, I mean, I asked you about this the other day, and this is fascinating for me. You beat Povetkin on March the 27th on the Rumble on the Rock, when Dillian White's involved in a Rumble on the Rock, I'm excited. I want to go into quarantine and be there. We're all going to quarantine and get on the same flight, by the way, Adam. Did you know that? We're all quarantined. No, we are. We are. We're all going on the same charter.
We're taking all the safety measures, man. You know, we're getting all out with the safety measures.
Oh, no, but I cannot wait. It's going to be everyone involved in the event, testing overnight. Stuck in a hotel room.
It's
going to
be so loud in that plane, boy. Oh my God, man,
it's going to be... We're going to rock Gibraltar, basically. We are going to rock... We're going to crack Gibraltar, brother. We're going to crack a hole in the rock of Gibraltar.
We're going to crack Povetkin's skull and then crack the rock.
Absolutely. Now, you get that victory. Are you... And the thing is with you, we're talking about activity. We're always talking about activity at the moment. Are you prepared to wait to fight the winner of Fury and Joshua after that?
We got to wait and see, man. You know me, I enjoy fighting. I like fighting, man. It gives me, you know, I enjoy fighting, man. You know, I love fighting. I love entertaining the people. I love having fun, friendly fights. So we'll see. If they're tied up, then we'll see. But let's see. I think there's some titles might have come vacant soon. Yeah. Or whatever, you know, there's other things. Who knows? I might drop down to Bridgerweight. Who knows?
Wow.
Is that, are you being serious? Are you winding us up?
I can never make Bridgerweight.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In shape, I'm at my skinniest, I'm about 248 pounds. Yeah. I'm a very skinniest. When I'm like skinny, I'm like 248. I think the lightest I've ever weighed is like 240, I think.
There's no chance.
No.
your legs weigh Bridger weight anyway, so...
Yeah.
No, it's cojones. It's cojones, I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
Listen, Dil, I want to get your opinion on the fight this morning. I don't know if you caught it. I know you'd have been training and whatever, but one of your old adversaries, Joseph Parker, was in action. Did you catch him? Did you see the fight with Junior Farr or not?
Yeah, I watched the fight. It was a terrible fight, man. Joseph Parker has really gone downhill since the last 2 years. He's like... I don't know, he's a guy that rises to occasion. I think he rises to the big fights. Like my fight, the Joshua fight, he rolls to them. But then when he fight these guys like Shandon Williams, all of these guys, Junior, I don't know. He's just like, he might be a guy that's young but finish early because obviously he rolls to fruition so early, you know what I mean? Because he was blitzing people. He haven't stopped any top guys in a long time. I think the last top guy he stopped was who?
What, Parker?
He hasn't stopped anyone in the top. You know, he's fought a lot of journeymen, but you know, he ain't stopped anyone in the top. He hasn't stopped ten guy really.
Well, he stopped Flores, Leopold, and Sean Del Winters. That they don't really count. His last, I mean, you probably don't.
And Leopold, those guys, nobody.
Yeah. The last stoppage, I mean, again, you might not count this, was Alexander Dmytrenko, but you probably wouldn't even count that one either. You know,
Dmytrenko would have been... Dmytrenko was half decent at the time, fair to be fair. Dmytrenko was half decent at the time, but then... But that's it. He hasn't stopped doing it. And this is the guy that makes excuse why he loves to me. And he's just annoying. He needs to focus on himself and what he's doing and stop going on the run and just keep talking nonsense. You know, we had the fight, you got bullied, and that's it. You know, focus on your career. Good luck to you, man. And that's it.
Serious question,
It wasn't a great fight, though. I don't know what you guys think. What do you guys think of the fight? It was a lot of holding.
It was an awkward fight to watch. But
it was weird.
Yeah. Go on, Gareth, what were we going to say there? Sorry, mate.
I want to just get back to Povetkin for a moment because what have you specifically wanted to work on since that first fight with him, Dillian, in your mind? Not necessarily what your coaches, your trainers have told you, but what did you take away from it afterwards when the dust settled?
Just be switched on at our point and just when I get him going, don't give him no chance. And, you know, obviously, I was a bit very respectful in the whole build-up. I was like very, you know, obviously, you know, I was a bit too respectful as well, man. You know, it's war, man. Mm. You know, I was a bit very respectful. I was a bit like, you know, there's times when he was tapping gloves all the time. I would hurt him and then he would tap gloves like that. You know, it was a bit, it was just to be more professional, more switched on and more consistent, man. You know, and just do what I do best. That's it, really. Just do what I do best. Because in the fight, I was on the front foot, but then I was boxing. I was like trying to box too clean and trying to box too calm and collect. You know, something that ain't my style, man. My style is to bring work, you know, to put in work. That's my style, and that's what I just need to go back to. Listen. On my worst day, I can give Povetkin work, like serious work. Mm-hmm. If I come correctly and come the way I should come, then should be a knockout victory for me, you know? And that's what I'm going to do.
Listen, we're looking forward to it, man.
Can't wait to rock the rock.
Go well in camp. Enjoy a little bit of Spain whilst you're there, my man. And we'll see you out in Gibraltar doing your thing. Also, thank you very much for keeping us entertained on Instagram stories. The magic hands thing with the Spider-Man guy today was absolutely hilarious, mate. So thank you. So thank you very much for that.
He hates it, man.
It put a smile on my face anyway, man. Mate. Top work. Listen. Gracias por tu tiempo, Dillian. There you go, my man. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Always good fun speaking to Dillian White. Looking forward to that fight on March the 27th. As I said, that is taking place in Gibraltar. Another man that joined us on the show was Derek Chisora. The reason for having him on is because he was on social media on Saturday calling out Joseph Parker following his fight with Junior Farr. We started this conversation, though, talking about ice baths. It took you a little bit of time to get into that ice bath, didn't it, mate? Did you have a little bit of trepidation?
I could not crack the ice. That was a problem.
It was frozen over, mate. It was like an ice skating rink. I don't know if you saw it, Gary.
It was like icebergs in that thing, man. So I was trying it with a hammer, sledgehammer. It was hard to crack.
Well, the funny things with Derek and the cold, right? I remember he won't remember this, but I know the only time you can beat Derek is when it's really cold. Because I beat him in a snowball fight before he fought Vitaly Klitschko. Yeah,
it never happened.
I hit him hard with the. He probably doesn't even remember it. Bounced off him. But he had little.
I remember that day. We were in Germany. I remember that day. Good fun.
It was good fun.
Derek, is the ice bath always part of your after session recovery? Is it always been part of it, or was it just a bit of fun on that particular day?
No, I jump in it every morning.
Just to get the old senses going before you head off down to the gym, yeah?
No, not even that. Before I take a shower, before I do anything, I just come out of my house and jump in it straight away.
There you go, Gareth. That's what you're doing wrong. Never mind this paddle boarding. Get yourself into the ice river. Gets you going for the day.
Well, I told you a couple of weeks ago, I was running around the village with just my shorts on, doing the Wim Hof with no top on. But it doesn't do it for me. And you know, look, Derek's doing it for a reason. Look, I've got to ask you, Del. Are you on the farm at the moment? Have you been on the farm over the Christmas or not?
No, I'm not.
Oh,
I'm in North London. I left the farm behind for a while.
Oh, I'm sad to hear that, because I thought that was a place of repose and peace for you around the animals, and that it gave you...
I left the farm for a while. We'll be back there soon, though.
Good man. That's what we like to hear. Derek, I've seen you on social media today, obviously aiming your attentions towards one particular fighter who was fighting this morning. Let's talk about his performance, because I'm sure that you watched that fight. What did you make of Joseph Parker's knock with Junior Farr this morning?
The fight, first of all, yeah, the guys, they did well. Because you have to understand, Joseph hasn't boxed for over a year, and he didn't have enough sparring in New Zealand. There's no fighters out there. Yeah. You know, so for him to get his timing was difficult. If you probably ask Joseph himself, he'd probably tell the only spotter this is about 8 rounds or 10 rounds, because there's nobody out there to spar.
Yeah.
It was for you to get your sparring partners to come to New Zealand, they have to quarantine for like a month. So both of them didn't have good sparring coming to help them out and train, you know. So first of all, the fight was okay. It was 1 to 10. I probably rated 4.5, to be honest.
Yeah,
but they did what they had to do to entertain all of us, basically.
Yeah, and he comes through it. He comes through it with a victory. I don't think anybody disputes the victory. Maybe one of those cards was a little bit wide, but end of the day, come through with a victory.
You know what? Saying about one of those cards, I think boxing has changed, man. You know, as fighters, as we fight, we train hard. But when guys just wake up from their house and go to the on the side of the ring and then wear their glasses and have a cup of tea and then start judging guys with, you know, going at it toe-to-toe and give those kind of those shambles scorecards, that is bad.
Yeah.
Can't disagree with you on that. So are we going to have to wait for crowds to come back for you to fight Parker?
You know what? I'm not going to wait. I've said to David that, you know what? We don't want to wait for crowds. You know, because really and truly, we don't know where we are. We don't know where we are.
So is he the guy you want, though? Is he? We know he's got a following here. Obviously, you've got a cult following now in the UK. So you're going to press ahead with that fight early summer, presumably, or May, June, with Joseph Parker?
No, we're pressing it for the next 8 weeks.
Wow. I'm thinking location. Obviously, we're in a weird time, aren't we? It's hard to plan for things at the moment, Derek. So regarding that, are you looking to do that in the UK, or are you bothered about where it is?
In the UK.
How far down the line are you with his team regarding the negotiations for that fight then, if we're talking 8 weeks?
It's up to David and Eddie right now. He's been in talk for a while anyway, so we'll see what happens.
You sound frustrated at the moment, and you know, we got that from Tyson Fury last week, Derek, that fighters want to get back in there, and presumably you want a date so you can feel motivated. You need it now at this stage in your career.
Yeah, listen, fighters want to get back in there, but what fighters as well have to understand is, you know, you have to take a massive pay cut if you want to get back in there with no audience. Like, is it? You know, if you're not doing pay-per-view, you take a pay cut. You know, if you're boxing on pay-per-view and you're making 300,000, now you have to take 100 grand.
Yeah.
And most fighters don't want to take that money. And you're like, oh, mate, there's nobody coming to watch you. Everybody's watching you on TV right now. So take what you can.
Derek, what's the experience like of fighting behind closed doors without fans, of which you experienced, obviously, in the Usyk fight?
You feel everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because obviously you
could hear the punches being thrown. You can hear the punches go past you. You know, if it hits you on the ribs, on your jaw, on your nose, you feel everything.
It must be weird, though, because you're used to obviously having 10,000, 15,000 people screaming your name when you're making your ring walk to the Hotel California that we've just been listening to there, you know? So that must be a bit of a weird experience, making the way to the ring without the fans in there.
Mate, it's the weirdest thing ever. But once you're in it, you're in it. There's no coming back. There's no pulling back and there's no coming out. You're in it. Especially when you arrive to the stadium, you can actually hear, when you're in your dressing room, you can hear the other guys chucking punches. Pow, 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 pow. And you can hear, get him, get him. Double jab, right hand. You know, it's so weird. But it is what it is.
Can I go back to that Alexander Usyk fight for a moment, Derek? You were beating him up for the first few rounds. His arrival in the heavyweight division has been greeted with a huge fanfare. You've been in there with him for 12 rounds. Obviously, he's very skillful. Do you think he's got what it takes to win a world title in the heavyweight division?
Yes, he does. I'm not going to lie to you, because his strategy is, he knows he can, if he blindsides you, he's going to turn you around and he's going to start hitting you hard. He's going to jump on you. He chucks loads of punches, basically. You know, they don't hurt punches, but he just scoring, taking points.
How do you think he gets on with Joe Joyce when they meet?
He'll win. He'll win that.
Now, on Saturday night, it was Canelo versus Avni Yildirim, a man that was out there as part of the promotion team. Matchroom is, of course, their CEO, Frank Smith. He was winding us up, talking about lovely temperatures and obviously being out in Miami and not in lockdown, which is all well and good. But he also gave us a little bit of information, seeing as that we've just been speaking to some heavyweights, about the heavyweight fight that we're all waiting for, Fury versus AJ. However, we started this conversation, and there's a theme with this, that we're starting conversations off-piste. We started talking about pyjamas.
I'm literally just pulling into the Hard Rock Stadium.
No here. Need. So, Frank, there's no need. There's no need to do that to us, mate. You know, you didn't need to tell us.
All right. It's only 28 degrees as well.
Oh, there you go. From agony to ecstasy. From the UK to Miami. Like, Frank, I've got to ask you, right? I've got to ask you about this, because Eddie Hearn accuses me of my hair being stuck in the 80s, my fashion being like George Michael. He's always taking the mickey. But what was going on yesterday with those Dolce & Gabbana pyjamas that he was wearing? You even took the mickey out of him on Twitter. What the hell is going on?
Firstly, your hair is very much stuck in the 80s, correct? But yeah, to be honest, I must admit, I did quite appreciate the pyjamas. Although on social media I gave him a bit of a hammering, I thought it looked all right. And, you know, I think, don't get me wrong, Canelo pulled it off slightly better than him. But, you know, he didn't look too bad and actually fitted in quite well for Miami.
How would a pyjama suit you?
He's not commenting on that, mate. He's
not
having any of it.
No
comment.
He's
not having any of it. I
promise it cut out, Gareth. So I would have commented.
Listen, it made good for social media memes anyway yesterday, with Canelo in his pyjamas and Eddie in his pyjamas as well. It gives everybody a bit of a talking point, and I believe that it was a bet well honoured on Eddie's part as well. So well done to him for that. Talk to me about the stresses of this week, because it might sound glamorous as talking about Miami and going to go and watch Canelo at the Hard Rock Stadium, but you had a little bit of trauma with the co-main event. A world title fight fell off at the last minute, but I'm sure that period of time, that 24 hours, that 36 hours in order to get the co-main back on for an interim title fight must have been incredibly stressful, Frank.
Yeah, obviously we found out the news that Martinez had to withdraw just after the press conference on Thursday. Then the team worked really hard to find a replacement, managed to get them into Miami, tested, all coronavirus free, and ready to fight for the WBC interim title. So, you know, it was a great job by everyone, and really, really exciting. And it's great to keep Arroyo active as well, because he'd been training for a long time for the fight. And, you know, the aim is get this fight out the way, and then they've got the big test for the WBC title against Martinez in due course.
No, absolutely. Congratulations to everybody involved. And obviously, well done, Abraham Rodriguez, taking that on the last minute, getting on a plane and getting himself over to Miami for the fight this evening. That's the co-main event. The main event is, of course, Canelo taking on Avni Yildirim. He's WBC mandatory. We'll talk about that fight in particular in a moment. But we're, as British fight fans, hoping that he comes through it this evening, so therefore he can move on to Billy Joe Saunders. That's what we're hearing the news will be. Is Billy in attendance tonight, Frank?
No, unfortunately, Billy's not here. He would have been here, but we actually, due to the travel restrictions, it made it very difficult for him. You know, if he would have come over, he would have had to quarantine when he got back. You know, obviously come over a period before to test as well here. So know, it didn't work out, especially with his training camp. And, you know, the key is to get the fight on with those fighters in the best possible shape. So, you know, I'm sure all being well tonight, you should hopefully hear some news for later in May.
Well, as you say, obviously you're not going to give us the official announcement right now, but should Saul Canelo Alvarez come through against Avni Yildirim tonight, do you think we're going to hear the date and the venue from you guys post-fight tonight?
Look, hopefully, all being well, we'll be able to release some details around the next fight. You know, all being well with Canelo tonight, no cuts, no hand injuries, anything. And, you know, obviously get the win. Then, we should be announcing something later this evening. So, fingers crossed we get to do that. May not be venue, but hopefully we can get as much detail out as possible.
Good to hear. On Canelo, because we spoke about him a lot over the last couple of weeks, in admiration, really, in a time where a lot of champions only fight twice, maybe three times a year, if we're lucky, to hear the best, the pound-for-pound best, said that he wants to fight four times this year, and those fights that he's naming are all guys with belts in his weight division to become the first ever undisputed super middleweight champion of the world. That's good to hear. It's good that the pound-for-pound number one is setting that example for everybody else.
Yeah, no, look, 100%. It's great for the sport of boxing. It keeps the momentum going. And, you know, it's what we all want to see. Obviously, box Callum Smith late December last year. Boxes tonight, boxes in May, wants to box September, December again. Five fights in a year period. It's unheard of, really, at his level. But, like I say, great for the sport of boxing. And it's going to help ensure that it keeps on growing and growing.
The other thing about it, Frank, not only is he setting the benchmark there, the top 20, 30 boxers in the world at the moment do tend to fight twice a year. And because of COVID restrictions, because of lockdown, a lot of those guys have not fought for a year when they come back. And we've seen lots of upsets as a result, or certainly the fact they might be ring rusty or whatever it is. But clearly for him, you know, having the momentum, activity is what people are talking about so much at the moment. The fact he's maintaining that activity does mean so much at his age as a boxer right now and where he is.
Yeah, completely. I think that he believes he's at the prime of his career right now and he wants to fight as regularly as possible. And, you know, like I say, it's great for the sport. It's great for him. He's got a great team. You know, he's constantly in the gym, constantly training. And he just wants to be the best there is. You know, he wants to become undisputed at 168 pounds. Obviously, the aim is the Billy Joe fight and then, you know, his aim is the Caleb Plant fight after that. But, you know, great for him, great for the sport. And as I say, at this time in his career, he's really taken every opportunity he can.
Frank, speaking of mega fights that all the fans are into, the one that I'm sure that you're asked about probably every 5 minutes of your existence at the moment is the one in the heavyweight division with the unified champion Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury. I've seen two contrasting bits of conversation this week from Anthony. All positive on his social media. Listen, we're close. I've spoken to my management team. I've spoken to my promoter. We're nearly there. Then I saw Tyson Fury speaking to ESPN, I think, this week, where he says, listen, we're a million miles off. We're no closer. What is the current situation with AJ versus Fury, Frank?
It's all fun and games, isn't it? Everyone's back and forth on it. But, no, look, we're all working towards, I think, the same goal here, but on both sides. We want to make the biggest fight there is in the world, and I'm sure that we can. Like I say, both sides are working as hard as they possibly can. And, you know, as soon as there is news, I'm sure it won't be held back for very long. So all being worked on. Hopefully, we'll have some more info soon on that front. But it's still the aim from our side, and you know, I truly believe it's the aim from their side as well.
Yeah, as I said at the top of the show, Adam, Frank, that you know that I thought a lot of what Fury spoke about with ESPN this week, I think was misinterpreted by huge swathes of the media online. And I think he was just expressing frustration almost at himself and his promoters that he hadn't had a fight in December and that he's been out for so long. You know, and he told me privately he was hoping that the fight would be kind of signed, sealed and delivered by the end of February. Because then someone knows the staging of their camp, what they need to do, where they're going to be, and they can start to make those plans. I think that's all that was this week. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, look, I think he just wants to be active, as you say. He wants to be fighting. And, you know, he's obviously, he just wants news as soon as possible. But these things take time, in all truth. You know, it does take work. It takes a lot of effort from all sides. I'm very confident it will get done. But, you know, I can understand from his side, he wants to be active. He hasn't, I think he boxed, was it February 2020?
A year ago.
A year ago now. So, you know, I can see from that standpoint, but everyone's working towards it, and these things do take time, especially at this level.
Mm. One of the most hotly anticipated, I suppose, but purse bids took place this week, especially in my time covering this sport. I've never seen so much coverage over social media over a purse bid. What did you make of that this week, and what did you make of Triller entering the boxing space? When I say boxing space, I mean the proper boxing space rather than the showbiz boxing space.
No, I think the Triller entering boxing is great for the sport. Competition is great for the sport. And anyone who wants to invest and build boxing, it's brilliant because, you know, ultimately we want boxing to be as big as possible. And that does take money, that takes investment. And, you know, I think they've done a great job. I think it's great for the fighters as well. Teofimo Lopez, George Kambosos, you know, will get what they deserve. In such a dangerous sport where these fighters risk their life, they deserve every penny they can get. And, you know, we saw there, Teofimo Lopez is going to make just under $4 million. George Kambosos, about $2.1 million. You know, brilliant. And although we didn't win, you know, I think we put in a decent-sized bid, and it would have been a great fight for us to get as well. But fair play to Triller, and great job.
I know, I completely agree with you. And when you look at pay-per-views in America, only in boxing last year, they got the biggest pay-per-view with Roy Jones Jr. And Mike Tyson, whether you like it or not. So it opened a market for them. I completely agree with you. It's nice to have another player in the market. It just enhances our sport.
Completely. And, you know, we don't want to... Obviously, look, every business wants to be number one. But it is great to have competition because it ensures you don't get complacent and you keep on working and pushing, you know, your business. So, look, it's brilliant and very exciting times for the sport of boxing, definitely.
What did you make of Mr. Aram's comments about you guys bidding on his fighter?
I think Mr. Aram is just throwing his toys out of the pram because he didn't win and he didn't get what he wants. But, you know, ultimately, shouldn't Bob Aram be happy that his client that he represents is getting paid very well? And the answer to that should be yes. Every fighter we represent, you know, ultimately our job is to do as well as possible for that fighter. And I'm sure the same should be said for Bob Arum's fighters on his side. So, you know, he didn't win, so of course he's not happy. He's lost his number one star to Triller, who put the money up. So, you know, it is what it is. That's business.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, on Saturday night, it was supposed to be the historic night for Carl Frampton taking on Jermell Herring. And if he'd have won it, he would have become a three-weight world champion. He received a hand injury and therefore had to pull out of that fight, but it has been rescheduled, and Carl's going to give you the date and location in this conversation. But we started talking, obviously, about the nature of the injury.
The fight's been kind of going on forever, it seems, but we had a confirmed date of February 27th, tonight, actually, is when I was meant to fight. Yeah. But because of an injury to my hand, it was postponed. But it has been confirmed for the 3rd of April in Dubai. So I had to take a few weeks off sparring and stuff. I've started back sparring there a few days ago. So all's going well. Hand's holding up well so far as well. So I'm just looking forward to the fight now.
Carl, we know that you had surgery on your hands after a previous fight. Is it a reoccurrence or is it a new thing?
No, it's a different thing. It's just a wee bit of ligament damage rather than a break or anything like that. So I think a lot of people are concerned about my hands and people close to me especially. But my hands are, obviously I've hurt them in that last bar, but they have been okay up until that point. The operations have went very well. But I hurt them off the top of a head in a spar, and that's just what happens in this game sometimes. Just very, very unlucky, but they're holding up well so far.
Good.
Carl, so presumably will you base your camp in Dubai? Will you go out there in early March now and be there for a month, or how will you do it?
Yeah, I think we're looking to do like at least 3 weeks anyway in Dubai. I do between 3 and 4 weeks normally when I fight in the States or anywhere else really. So that's something that I've always done. I don't feel it's professional. They're only going to go in a week before or 10 days before even. I think I need to give myself as much time to get used to the time difference and just my surroundings and everything. So it'll be a minimum of 3 weeks, but we're still deciding an exact date to go out.
There was a wonderful look inside your camp recently. I thoroughly enjoyed Chris Lloyd spending 6 weeks with you, I think it was, where he'd filmed you with Jamie Moore. I thought it was a wonderful insight into you and your life. And I tell you what, I was so taken with your daughter, Carla. It's Carla, isn't it? She's special.
Yeah, it is.
She is a special human being. And I was wondering while watching you with her, because she's such a bright spark, isn't she, that I wondered, well, if that girl wants to go into boxing, what's Carl's reaction going to be like?
Do you know what, Gareth? So Inside Fighting, that's a new project me and Chris have got going, and it's going pretty well. And it's kind of, well, initially the first part of it is delving into the my backstory and me in preparation for this fight. But the amount of people that have praised Carla from what she said on that documentary has been insane. She's such a bright kid, and she's such a great kid, very nice and sensitive and down to earth and caring. And everybody seems to love her. But she's very, very sporty as well and very competitive. She's really into her cross-country running. She's in the school cross-country running team, and she comes out and does some 5Ks with me. And we've done as much as an 8K. But she's competitive, and I think she probably will ask. We see what's going on with,
here we go,
female boxing, yeah, and Katie Taylor, yeah, and Chantel, yeah, Cameron, and everybody else. And I have a feeling she will ask at some point. I'd rather she didn't, but I'd also rather my son didn't.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's it, really.
Listen, you cross that bridge when it comes, mate. I've no doubt.
Yeah.
What's the thought on the fight being rearranged for Dubai? When I originally saw that, I started thinking, is it because that you can get fans in? What's the situation there, Carl? Will there be fans in attention?
I think that that's what they're hoping for, fans. I think it was more of a chance a week ago that there was fans. I think we were looking certain that they were going to fill a stadium, but now it's not looking that certain. I think rules have changed a little bit in Dubai and the UAE. So I think there may be some fans, but maybe not as many as we would have liked. But things may change again. Who knows? But some fans is better than none. So, yeah, I'm just looking forward to the fight. And it's, you know, I've been to Dubai once in my life before. Loved the place. It's going to be a bit different fighting there, but it's a fantastic place.
No, absolutely, mate. Does the delay and living obviously with the same fighter in your head for such a long period of time, does it heighten any animosity? I mean, you're both top blokes. We've had both of you on the show. Everybody speaks very highly of the pair of you. But when you were specifically living with one bloke in your head for such a long period of time, does the animosity get bigger and bigger and bigger every single month that it goes on?
No, not at all. I don't think there is any animosity. I don't have any animosity towards him. I just see this as a fight, and that's what it is. And there's not too many of my opponents that I have felt that way about. And Jamel's just a guy who I respect completely. He's in this game for the same reasons as me. He wants to win and be involved in big fights, win big fights, provide for his family. And I've got to respect that. So there's no animosity from my side at all. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to a great fight and finally getting it done.
Carl, I found myself talking about you a lot in the wake of Josh Warrington's loss a couple of weeks ago. Because you had life and death with him. You had a war with him, an incredible war, that night in December 2018. Did you watch that fight and wonder whether that fight you had with him took an awful lot out of him? And did you have views on whether the referee Howard Foster, Adam and I spoke to Robert Smith about it last week on the show, fascinating conversation actually. Did you have views at the time when you were watching it on him being a wizened champion, undefeated, that Howard Foster should have given him all the opportunities to stay in the fight that he gave him?
Well, I did watch the fight. I'll answer that, the first question. I did watch the fight. I was surprised at what I was seeing. I was expecting Josh to deal with Lara, although I hadn't seen much of Lara. I hadn't seen any of them, if I'm being honest, but a really unorthodox, hard-hitting Mexican. And I think that Howard Foster gave him all the opportunity in the world, but I do think it should have been stopped earlier. But we can't just solely blame Howard Foster on that. I think that, you know, I love Sean, his dad, who's a trainer, but I think the towel should have come in before it did, before the fight was stopped as well. At the end of that fourth round, he was hurt bad, and when he stood up for the start of the fifth, he still wasn't right. And I just feel like fights like that take a lot out of you. I don't think the fight against me took as much out of Josh as it took out of me, really, if I'm being honest. He won that fight, you know, convincingly, although it was a good fight. But I don't think it was a case of him, of my fight taking too much out of him. I just think, you know, a lack of crowd, lack of motivation, really. The world title wasn't on the line. He just lost the chance to fight for the Ring magazine. You know, it was all a bit of underwhelming, really. And I think it all played a part in a negative way for Josh.
And inactivity as well, maybe 15 months out. And I wonder whether, you know, you try to, obviously, you know, you're an experienced fighter, so you don't have to spar all the time. You know exactly what you're doing. You know how to taper down and everything. But we're talking about it every week on the show at the moment, Carl. High-level elite fighters like yourself, there's 30, 40 guys in the world at the moment who almost haven't fought for a year under real circumstances. Yeah. It's a real factor,
inactivity,
isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is, Gareth. And inactivity plays a real key in some people's demise, and I think certainly that was something that Josh wouldn't have been happy with, how long that he was out of the ring for. I think another thing that I think may have affected the fight was it was made at 9 stone, and there was no titles on the line. Now Josh, he's a big featherweight. I don't think he makes it comfortably. I don't see why the fight wasn't made at 9-2, 9-3, something like that. To make it a little bit more comfortable for Josh. I think that was a mistake from everyone involved, really, in making the fight, to really kill him to get down the 9 stone for a fight with no title.
Yeah, very, very good point, yeah.
Carl, I've just got two more things for you. Obviously, we saw a cracker last week in your division, Valdez versus Burchell. What did you make of Oscar's performance last weekend?
It was a magnificent performance. I've been getting things wrong recently. I've done a kind of double prediction on my own YouTube channel, and I says Warrington inside about five or six, and Burchelt inside about five or six, I think. So I got them way wrong. And I thought Burchelt was just going to be too big and strong. And Valdez was amazing. He was very, very disciplined, and he had to be disciplined. We've seen Valdez before where he just gets, he's a bit gung-ho and he gets drawn into fights and has shootouts with people. Mm-hmm. You could see what he'd been trying to do in previous fights. He put it really into practice in this fight. And you have to give credit, well, to Valdez for carrying out that game plan, but also to Eddie Reynoso for being able to change a marauding, brawling fighter into a very clever boxer. And I think tactically, he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was absolutely sensational. Finally, what would it mean to become a three-weight world champion?
It would mean the world. It would mean the world to me and to my family, my kids, and to Jamie Moore and Nigel Travis and everybody who's been involved in my career, going back as far as my amateur coaches and everybody who's played a part, you know, big or small. So it would mean so much. It would mean so much to the people of back home, Northern Ireland and Ireland as well, and I suppose the UK too. So it's a huge opportunity for me, and I intend to make the most of it.
Are you still doing the ferry, by the way? The 9-hour ferry.
I've been mixing it between the boat and flights. So just depending on how I feel. My last trip to I'm in Manchester now, and my last trip over was on a flight.
Yeah.
So the ferry's just it's an absolute pain in the arse, to be honest. But
it sounds it, mate. Yeah. It doesn't sound the most attractive thing in the world to be doing. No. But at least you get 3 weeks in the build up to the fight in Dubai with a bit of sun on your back, and I'm sure that puts an extra little bit of a spring in your step as you're building up towards a fight with a bit of sun knocking about as well.
Absolutely, I think so. You know, it's the sun makes everybody happy. They hate the sunshine. So, I'm looking forward to getting out there and just finally getting a fight done.
Another fighter that was due to fight on Saturday night is Archie Sharp. He's obviously in the same weight division as Carl Frampton. He was due on that undercard. A nice little showcase for him on the under of the WBO Super Featherweight Championship. He's highly ranked with the WBO and he's got eyes on the prize of world titles. We started the conversation, though, talking about his injury as to why he wasn't fighting on Saturday night and when he expects to be back in the ring.
I picked up a little injury. I was due to be fighting tonight on the show, but unfortunately I've got a little injury, but the recovery is going very, very well, and hopefully I'll be out within the next couple of months. So yeah, positive now. So now I'm on, like I say, a good recovery.
Well, we've just spoken to Carl Frampton, he's confirmed that his fight's being rearranged for April the 3rd. Do you fancy it? Dubai, mate? Get out. Can you make that? Will you be fit in time for April the 3rd?
Do you know what? April the 3rd would be lovely, but do you know what? I think that might be a bit early for myself. I'm looking probably late April, okay. Early May.
All right.
Nice. Good evening, Archie. Case in point with Carl Frampton. He sits at number 4 in the WBO rankings at the moment. Obviously, he's fighting Jamel Herring on April the 3rd in Dubai, as we were talking about. A certain Archie Sharp sits at number 5 in the WBO rankings. Now, yeah. I know you're 19-0. You are highly touted. There's levels in the sport, as we know. You don't mind calling anyone out. With Shaka Stevenson's been on your lips. How quickly or how slowly do you want to move your career along? Because you're already up there in those world rankings. How do you see the staging of your career from this point?
I think for me now I've separated from my coach, who was Richard Sawyer from the age of 7, and I've changed things up now. I'm now with Al Smith down at the iBox gym. Mm. So I've now spiced things up, if you like, with the training and learning new things. And I've got a great trainer, Al Smith, who's got all the experience. Yeah. So working with him and him seeing my potential, he really does believe that getting a move on this year definitely makes sense. He, like I say, we're gutted that we've got the injury, because he was really looking forward to for me being out there, because like I say, we've learned loads over the few months us working together. So so for myself and my team, we are looking at pushing on this year really, and trying to get these big fights in.
And also, Archie, what does that do for your confidence when you hear another voice confirm the things that maybe you're thinking in your head, but an experienced voice that says, yeah, actually, the things that you're thinking are actually viable, mate. You know what I mean? You are good enough, and we should be pushing you on in these directions. What does that do for your confidence?
It just boosts it even more. Like, being at the age of 7 and coming through the amateurs, always fighting at a high level, everyone was always saying it, but now I'm in the pro ranks, and I'm literally a stone throw away from where I want to be. And hearing it from a great trainer like you say, Alan Smith, who's got all the experience, been around, he's learnt from Jimmy Tibbs and all sort of Dean Powell, some great trainers. For him to pull me aside and say, Arch, look, you've got a lot of ability, a lot of talent. I definitely believe that you should be mixing with, that he believes I can beat Frampton, he believes I can beat Jamel Herring, he believes in my ability, and which just encourages me even more.
I mean, tonight would have been a wonderful opportunity for you to be on that card, do your thing, with the main event being the world title. Obviously, everything kind of didn't materialise like that, but I'm sure more opportunities will arise in the not-too-distant future, as you've said. Hopefully, you'll be back out by the back end of April. A name that's always linked with you, Archie, whenever I speak to people on the British scene in particular, is always Zelfa Barrett. His name always pops up with people chatting here, there and everywhere. Is that a potential fight maybe going forward? Obviously, Zelfa's just fought recently in the Kiko Martinez fight.
Yeah, so that fight, me and Al actually sat down and we spoke about Kiko Martinez, and then within a week it got announced. So we had the same sort of thinking. But Zelfa Barrett has always been chucked up. I think after obviously his last outing with Kiko, I think Kiko definitely does deserve the rematch, and then we'll see how things go from there. But Zelfa's a great kid, and if he's destined to do what he says he's destined to do, then down the line, myself and him will end up fighting for bigger titles on the line, because I'm, like I say, a stone throw away from a world title fight. Once I pick my WBO world title fight and win my title, then these big fights over in the UK will be happening. And Zelfa, if he's still winning and winning big titles, then that fight will happen down the line.
Fair point. Yeah.
I'm just looking at your record, like, 2020, you had one fight. Inactivity is something we're talking about, or activity we're talking about a lot tonight. Tyson Fury, Carl Frampton, Josh Warrington a couple of weeks ago. In 2017, you fought 5 times. In 2018, you fought 3 times. Last 2019, 4 times. Only one fight last year. We're into 2021 now. How have you, as a young fighter who's still developing, how have you maintained your momentum over the last 17, 18 months?
Well, I won't lie, it has been very frustrating. Like you say, I boxed title fight back-to-back, and I had a very good momentum going. But unfortunately, with COVID and what's happening with the world, I've only, like you say, boxed once. So it's been very frustrating. But I think the main thing is just being in the gym. Being with Al, I've been able to learn more. So yeah. I've just been taking the time out, learning more, working on a few things that I needed to work on. I've watched loads of fights back of myself and other fighters, and just doing a lot more studying. I've just been using the time as wise as possible, really.
Good. Good.
Seeing as that we're talking on that world level, Arch, and you're there. You're only a couple, probably. Whenever we get back in there, you're not too far away from obviously fighting for those world titles. We know what's happening with the WBO, right? So we know that Herring and Frampton are there, and we know that Shakur Stevenson's lurking around as well. What do you make of the other guys in that division that are holding belts? I mean, what did you make of the Oscar Valdez fight last week? Brilliant performance from him. And what did you make of Joey Diaz losing his belt on the scales?
I think him losing his belt on the scales was very unprofessional, because I don't believe he's been at super featherweight for that long for him to blow up like that. So I don't really know what's happening there, whether he'll stay at super featherweight, I'm not too sure. But Oscar Valdez put on a masterclass performance. What a finish that was. I think that was a great knockout and a great performance all in all.
Mm. Mate, listen, it's an exciting division and you're right in the mix of it. So you're looking at the back end of April before we get to see you back out doing your thing, mate.
Yeah, so back end of April, hopefully. But my recovery's been come on really well.
Good.
Which was surprisingly. So it's come on very well. And hopefully, end of April, early May.
We'll finish the podcast with a little bit of nostalgia. Yes, I was an 8-year-old boy in February 1989. when Frank Bruno went over to Las Vegas to take on the baddest man on the planet, Iron Mike Tyson. Of course, there's a massive narrative around that particular fight, and there's a documentary that was released this week, 32 years on. So we thought we'd have a little bit of a trip down memory lane on the show ourselves on Saturday evening. If you missed it, this is what it sounded like.
This will not be the first time that Mike Tyson and Frank Bruno have faced each other in a boxing ring. When Tyson was 16 years old and Bruno was in this country to fight a boxer named Mike Jameson, they sparred.
I feel very confident. I've got the power, the timing. The time is right to beat him. It's peak time.
Bruno's clear, but he knows the power of Mike Tyson. Tyson, if ever there was a guy fighting like a raging bull, it's Mike Tyson.
Because he's trying to impress his Englishmen out here. And I'm just convinced, you know what I mean? These fellas, how dare them challenge me with their somewhat primitive skills? They're just as good as dead.
Right hand lands. Tyson knows he's got him in big trouble. If he doesn't answer it, Richard Steele has moved in and has stopped the fight. It's all over. Michael Tyson wins on a fifth round TKO.
Oh, I tell you what, that brings back some memories. 1989, February, when Tyson finally met Frank Bruno. I'm Adam Catterall, and Gareth A. Davies alongside me. We're finishing off the show, taking a little bit of a trip down memory lane. Have you managed to get your eyes across the documentary as of yet, Gareth, or is
no,
the memory still fresh from February 1989?
Yeah, it is. It's still on my to watch list, even though it came out. I think it came out this week, didn't it? Thursday
yes,
or Friday.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've had a little gander, but I haven't had time to watch the whole thing yet. But I want to sit down with a nice glass of tequila and a nice cigar and actually savor the two men being together, because I've seen, read, and heard that like they were like long lost brothers when they filmed them.
Do you know
something?
It's the best thing about fight sports,
yeah,
when you see things like this. I mean, we were in a really lucky position when we covered the Wilder Fury first fight, and they did a Legends Day, and me and you were in there like thick as thieves, weren't we? In and around these legends, the Lennox Lewis's and the
Evander, come over here, Evander,
those characters.
Michael, yeah, exactly. Buster Douglas, come over here,
amazing.
Please. Yeah.
It was amazing just to watch them all chatting amongst each other. It's just fantastic to see.
And don't you remember I think it was either that day or the day afterwards, Lennox nudging Riddick Bowe really hard up on stage. Do you remember at the weigh-in? Like,
still
really
got
giving
beef.
Him an elbow, getting
still
him out
got
of the
beef.
Way.
He's still got beef for that big WBC belt going in the bin, hasn't he? But you're right to bring up the moment that Bruno and Tyson did meet each other. Because the documentary, if you've not seen it, Sky have done this documentary. It's fantastic. It tells you the tale of what happened and the build-up to the fight, how the fight played out, and obviously the second fight. But the ending of it is Frank Bruno going over to America to meet Mike Tyson. And recently, Frank caught up with Spencer Oliver on Fight of My Life here on TalkSport to talk about that particular moment.
You lost that fight and your title to Mike Tyson. You've decided to hang up your gloves. And more recently, actually, you've just been out to visit Mike Tyson, haven't you? Tell us a little bit about that. And are you friends now?
Well, I can't be friends if someone's trying to knock you or kill you. I mean, I can't be friends. Yeah, I went over there. It was very, very, very nice and very, very down to earth and very, very calm. He didn't have the entourage around him, so he seemed much more better than having all yes men around him. He just had his PA and a lady PA as well, and he just kept it on the level. He was very, very the best I've ever seen him. I think he's into Bob Marley, though. You know what I mean?
I think you would take him now, Frank.
Yeah, I tell you, I saw him now, and he's coming back. Holyfield is coming back. This one wants to come back or whatever. I said, don't rule me out. You know, you're not allowed back in England, but we can do something in Ireland.
He's a very different character, is Mike Tyson, than the Mike Tyson that was around in 1989, the baddest man on the planet. Obviously, he's gone through an awful lot, served jail time in between the first Bruno fight and the second Bruno fight. And he's most certainly developed and matured as a human being over the years. And to see those two guys sit down in, I think it was Tyson's house or a rented house somewhere in Miami or wherever it was that they met, just to see Frank, because it seems that it's lived with Frank for a long period of time, that those two defeats, and he seemed to get a bit of closure out of it. It's important that that fighters get those moments, I think, post-fight, whether it be 5, 10 years or, in this case, 32 years down the line, just for a bit of peace. And it was nice to see them old boys having a bit of a chat with each other.
Definitely. And you've got to remember, when they went into that first fight, as you say, he was the baddest. Iron Mike Tyson was the self-styled baddest man on the planet, and he lived up to that reputation, didn't he? And he, at the time, Adam, remember, he was 35-0. He was the youngest heavyweight champion in history. He'd been the undisputed champion. He had 31 KOs in those 35 victories. And the funny thing is, and I spent a bit of time around Frank Bruno recently. I had a dinner with him the year before last. He worked with me on the second Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua fight. I worked with him and Shannon Briggs doing a commentary on the fight from back in London when I was unable to travel. But I had a great night with those guys. And I feel very sensitive for Frank because of what he's been through. And this guy, remember, when we were growing up, when we were young men, when I was a young man anyway, and you were probably still at school, that he was a national treasure.
Yeah.
And genuinely was a national treasure. And there's a vulnerability to Frank, that Frank Bruno, that you saw Mike Tyson appreciate with true humanity and love. Yeah. And you know, I was thinking about this the other day. In 100 years' time, the sport we love now, which is already seen as barbaric by some sections of the society and is already a niche sport, you just wonder whether the way society's going, it'll almost be outlawed by then. And two individuals who share the fear, the suspense, the thrill, the pressure, all the things that they bring together in a big, momentous occasion, they share that moment together, whether they win or lose, whether they're knocked out or not. And years later, to see them reflect on something like this is a reason for me that I hope that society does keep fight sports, that it doesn't get pushed underground, that it is celebrated as these are individuals, because of the way they are shaped, what's in their DNA, they need to fight, you know?
No, listen, this fight in particular is very, it brings back a lot of emotions for me, because I remember this being the first moment that I watched something with my dad, and it made me go, what is this? This is unbelievable. The narrative's going into this. I remember vaguely now, as I watched that documentary, I remember certain parts of what was happening in the timeline, because I remember seeing a front page splash of a car crash where Mike Tyson crashed the car into a tree, which then delayed the fight because it was supposed to happen at Wembley, if we remember that. And then it got rescheduled about 4 or 5 times. Then it got taken over to Vegas. And then I just remember the newspaper clippings and all those types of things building up towards this monstrosity of a fight. And at the time, this fight, somebody will correct me, I'm sure, but if my memory serves me right, this was the first fight on Sky. Sky launched in 1989.
That's right.
And they used this fight to sell the dishes. So we didn't have Sky at my house. So all the normal fights were on terrestrial television. So my uncle, who had a few quid, he got Sky. And me and my dad, because my dad were looking after me and my sister, took us to my uncle's house, and we ended up watching this fight on Sky in the middle of the night. It was absolutely captivating. All the Las Vegas glitz and glamour. You saw like Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger in the crowd, and all those types of things. It was just absolutely unbelievable. And then off the back of that, you watch a few Rocky Balboa films and you become a boxing fan, don't you? But you're right in what you're saying. Frank Bruno was an icon. He was a cult hero. He lost that fight, but he came back a hero. Nobody cared. He came back and he was celebrated. And like you say, what just a real signpost moment, especially with my love of this sport anyway.
But it was also like there was no feeling out process in this fight, Adam.
No,
they just they just went for it. And obviously,
Frank was down in 10 seconds, wasn't he? 20 seconds or something like that. Yeah,
down. But up at 4.
Yeah.
Up at the count of 4, Bruno had a point deducted for excessive holding because he was trying to survive. And then Bruno
clipped him,
hit
yeah.
Tyson yeah. and rocked him for the first time in his career.
Yeah.
Really staggered him for the first time in his career. You know, it's so thrilling. It's so exciting. And like you say, at that time, there wasn't a template for us. You know, you mentioned tonight, you got it all worked out. You've got Rozenstruik and Garnet on UFC at about 3.
Yeah.
Then you'll switch over and watch, or you'll watch Canelo against Yildirim.
Yeah.
It's been my life doing that if I'm not on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember weekends when I'm not up till 5-6 in the morning, you know, on a Sunday morning, and you work, have a little sleep, you carry on. And I think this was one of the first times that we were all doing this. And there was something exciting about, you know, you could go out to a nightclub and come back and watch the fight.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people did. Like you said, people hosted parties around this thing, you know, I mean, Frank looked frightened of Tyson that night as well. Yet he fought like the as they were called, the horizontal heavyweights. The Britons were used to going over to America and being beaten by the Americans. And I think one of the big things about this documentary is seeing how people are affected in life. You'd never have thought all those years ago, 32 years ago, that Mike Tyson would be a pot-smoking hippie in his 50s.
Yeah.
And Frank Bruno would recover from mental illness, open his own centre, and that these two men would come together like brothers. It's extraordinary, really. That's why our sport's really, really bizarre, amazing and extraordinary.
So there you have it. That's what Fight Night on Saturday night sounded like. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe to this podcast. You can do it via iTunes or via the TalkSport website. We will be back next week with more guests and, of course, a bigger preview for UFC 259. And who knows, you might even hear from some of the protagonists. Make sure you come and join us. We'll catch you next time.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.